The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I am not afraid of death. I'm not sure I want to be there when it happens, though. Very nice to have you here. Doctor Is In is the name of the program. I am the host of the program. I'm Dr. Ray Grandy, not a real doctor, as my 5-year-old son once said. Dad, you're not a real doctor. Andrew, what's a real doctor? Can you give shots? No. I can drink a shot. No. All right. So, not a real doctor, a PhD. Pizza Hut driver. Permanent head damage. Post-hole digger. Putterer in the history of Denmark. Nevertheless, here on the program, we can talk about your situations, your circumstances, a lot of respects, your life, in a very abbreviated form, obviously. This is not therapy. I'm not in the office. I'm in the studio. But you can ask a question, or you can fill out kind of a little bit of history. You and I can put our heads together and see if we can come up with something, nugget, something you can use. No therapy here, no diagnosis. If it's about a kid, maybe outsmarting you, and he may outsmart me, but he's not going to outsmart both of us. Plus, remember, you have all the leverage, so you don't have to be smarter than he is. The number to get onto the program is 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number. I may have to do an immediate switching of manlog here because I couldn't open up that particular... I thought it was a fascinating article, but Andrew Kruczek's trying to work it out for me because he wants to put it here on the... whiteboard, but he's got to email it to himself, so I'm waiting for him to do that. Let me give you the number one more time, 877-573-7825. Personal questions, generic questions, things you don't understand about psychology or development or intellect or a particular diagnosis or the culture or faith. Faith as it interacts with psychology, all of that. I want to congratulate, and there's so many of them. Another EWTN radio partner, WMKP, FM 98.9, serving Gainesville, Georgia. 10 years on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Congratulations to Carol Bush, Mark Pepper, their team at Totus Tuus Catholic Radio, from all of us here, EWTN. One more announcement, and if that article isn't up, then I'm going to have to go to Plan B Manalog. It's a free ebook, Waiting for the Prodigal Son. It's a resource for parents, spiritual parents, anybody waiting for a loved one to come to know the merciful love of God. Go to EWTN.com/. Ooh, that's rough. St. Luke ebook, Waiting for the Prodigal Son. Andrew can't open it. All right, I will go then to my Plan B manalog. Says it's from a private account. Huh. Oh, that's weird. I'd like to do it if I could remember it. I won't remember all the details. So let me shift gears. I'm sorry is among the toughest things to say, along with I was wrong and Worcestershire sauce. Those are three toughest things to say. But I'm sorry really is tough because it carries a lot of emotional weight. Could carry some, oh, you just got it? All right, well, you throw it up there, and I will, in fact, shift from I'm sorry to this. We can do this. It's my program. I'm allowed. And I can stall a little bit longer. Let me give you the intro on it then before I go to the article. There it is. Ha ha ha. Andrew, you're the best. Every book I've written, I have handwritten. I don't type. I can backspace at about 90 to 100 words a minute, but if I want to go forward, I'm about 20 to 30 words a minute with two index fingers. And when I type, it's similar to me wearing boxing gloves. So I'm not very fast. Also, when I write it, I can just go all over the place. I draw this arrow over here, and I scratch off that word, and I turn this word around. I flip this sentence phrase around. I just do this constantly. I'm writing it. Then when it's in somewhat readable form, I turn it over to Molly, the dear woman who types it. She gives me back the typed out copy, and then I slash it to ribbons because I'm totally unsatisfied with what I wrote. Needs a lot of editing, in my opinion. Not unusual for me to edit something 5, 10, 15 times. Sometimes when the editing is so bad, I will rewrite it by hand to give to Molly again for typing. And I noticed something. I've been noticing this for years, and this is really something to have this guy say this. I notice that when I write cursive, that sometimes as I'm writing, a better thought will come to me right at that point in the sentence or in the paragraph. It just seems to happen. I'll be writing it, and I'm not thinking. I'm just sort of writing, and then I'll think of a better way to say it right then. Right then. And I've seen studies that have said when you handwrite something, it is so much better for your thinking process than typing it. Everybody types. I got to be one of the few left. I mean, I can't remember how many legal tablets I've gone through over the years. It's got to be hundreds. Got to be. I bought 3 2 days ago, and I'm down to the last one. So let me give you this study. Between 2011 and 2019, a gentleman named Dr. Hiroshi Tanaka tracked 300 patients over age 80 at a Kyoto geriatric center. All had zero cognitive decline, perfect recall, and very good processing speed. He expected genetics or diet or maybe the luck of the draw. Instead, now this is interesting, and you can't go so far as to say this is causal. It's correlative, but it needs to be replicated. Every single one had the same daily habit. 15 minutes of handwriting. No typing, no texting, physical pen on the paper, or for me, pencil on the paper. They did MRI scans. They found that handwriting activates 17 brain pathways simultaneously: motor control, spatial reasoning, memory encoding, language processing. Typing uses one. Digital texting is muscle memory. Handwriting is active. He called it active cognitive load. Your brain can't automate it, so it stays fully engaged. And the difference compounds over decades. Now, that's encouraging. I would love to see it replicated. He tested 120 adults ages 65 to 75 with early memory loss. Half journaled by hand 15 minutes a day. Half typed. After 6 months, the handwriters showed 41% better word recall You know how that is. You can't remember the word. You can't find it. You can't remember who that actor was. And 34% showed faster processing speed. In other words, think quicker. I got my processing speed gone. The pen doesn't just record thoughts. It builds the neural infrastructure that holds them. Wow. Let me see what else he's got here. Andrew, this is great. Thank you. He concludes, some people think memory loss is inevitable. Genetics, ailing. Pop supplements, hope for the best. Wait for a cure. Now, some memory loss obviously is inevitable. That's going to happen. You're going to get a certain deterioration if you are predisposed, you have certain genetics. However, others say your brain doesn't necessarily decay from age. It decays from disuse. 15 minutes of handwriting daily, and I do a lot more than that. There'll be times when I'll sit down and I'll write for an hour to two just handwriting. So my fingers hurt, kind of cramp up. Builds the system. One group, typing, allows the decline to occur. The other prevents it with a pen or pencil. Fascinating. I'd sort of love to see a more look at that one. Of course, I just forgot when the break was. Andrew can text me and remind me here. 877-573-7825. We got open lines. 877-57-EQUAL. That is the number to call to get onto the program. Very much love to hear from you. As always, you make the show. I don't. They can get another host. We can't get other you.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
In the fourth rule for the discernment of spirits, St. Ignatius of Loyola describes seven forms of spiritual desolation. The first form of spiritual desolation is darkness of soul. This darkness of soul is in direct contrast to the workings of the good spirit in spiritual consolation, that of inspiration. A soul experiencing darkness of soul feels they are in, as Father Timothy Gallagher describes it, an anxiety-filled darkness. Father Gallagher writes, here the person feels helplessly trapped in confusion, unable to comprehend what is occurring spiritually. Mingled with this inability to understand is the effectively heavy sense that all things are going badly and will continue to worsen. Though the experience of spiritual desolation can be difficult, the call is always to reject it. Spiritual desolation is always built on a lie.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the Rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio Travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Got a question on that. Does this thing about writing for 15 minutes work only for words, or does it apply to numbers? I would think it's the mechanical ability to simply write stuff down. In other words, if you're writing 6 plus 6 equals 12, and you write that, or you're doing some binomial equation, a plus b the quantity squared, which, by the way, I'm sounding smart, but that's the only thing I remember from 5 semesters of mathematics. If they printed. Now, you guys are too clever. Second caller said if you printed instead of cursive. I think it's just a matter of, he says, 15 minutes of handwriting. I probably threw in cursive. He just said handwriting. So anything where you probably use your hand, motor manipulating, whatever it is that you're thinking about, whether it's a letter to somebody, whether you just decide I want to do the math tables as quick as I can, 12 times 12 is 144, 12 times 15 is 180, whatever you want to do there. Okay, so that's good stuff. Thank you very much for these questions. Indy. Every time I say Indy, I'm thinking, well, I'm just kind of thinking, what was the name of the show with Harrison Ford? Lost Ark, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indy. Hi, Indy from San Diego.
Hey,
no.
Ian. Hey, Dr. Ray.
That is not San Diego, that's South Dakota, right?
Yes. Can you hear me, Dr. Ray?
You're clear, yes.
Okay, I appreciate your show. And I appreciate your insights on same-sex marriage and whatever it's not supposed to happen as far as I'm concerned. But I do, it makes me a little bit ticklish when your show is over with. Well, I got to go, but walk with God. I got to run, but to walk with God. I love that.
Well, I'm
but what my question is here today, I've been married for 36 years in July. And my sister-in-law, my wife's sister, we haven't gotten along for 35 years. Maybe 70% of the time we don't get along at all. And she's probably an hour and a half by car from here. And the 20%, she agreed with me because it was partially her idea. And 10% was just completely her idea. So we've been going back and forth. I don't see her that much, and I don't mind either. But now here, last about end of October, she came down and started throwing up. So I took her to the local hospital, local small town hospital, and sent her home the next day. And then she got home about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and later on went to a big hospital at the Mayo Clinic. And she got home, and a couple of days later, I called, I asked my wife, hey, we need to go over and see your sister. She said, no. And I called her, and I said, well, is there a chance we could come over and maybe help out, cheer you up? And she said, no. That was on a Thursday. I'm leaving for Rochester on Sunday, and I don't want to see anybody, and I don't want to see anybody a long time after that either. Okay. But my wife did go over about 2 Sundays ago and checked in with her niece over there, nobody at home. Checked in with her nephew, and after a while he came out.
Well, Indy, why are you having problems with this? She said she doesn't want to see anybody.
Well, what I would like to ask you, we don't get along. We have different ideas on different things. But what my question is, she even didn't want to go see her, but her nephew... mother's son took her over. Ah, let's go, whatever. But my question is, how do you approach that from now on? I mean...
What do you got to approach, Indy?
I mean, do I stop going there or just call back again? Hey, can I come over? How would you do it, Dr. Ray?
I would do it by respecting her wishes. If she said, I don't want to see you.
Okay.
All right. That's what she said. Now,
okay.
At some
me,
point,
Dr. A, it would have to come out of her mouth to my ears.
Oh, you're not sure that's what she meant because you get it through your wife?
No, she told me right in the face over the phone. And you don't have to come around for a long time after that.
She's well, the question, Indy, becomes whether she is ill and she doesn't want to see anybody in that condition. Or it's more or less, I just really don't think you should be part of all this because I don't really like you that much anyway, so stay away. Which one do you think it is?
Okay. And if I ever hear from her, if she picks up the phone and says, hey, I'm okay or whatever, you're okay to stop by, I will. Otherwise, I'm going to keep my distance.
And you could wait.
Because I don't want to add insult to injury, well, whatever yeah, she's dealing with cancer, yeah, to start an argument.
At this point, you could make her mad. I would suggest a period of time where you either, you don't necessarily have to pick up the phone. I mean, if she'll take a text, you can say, hey, just checking up on you. Hope you're doing well. Think about you often. Say, I say prayers for you. You know, something like that to show her there's that.
You bumped me onto a good idea. You did.
The door is open. And she can walk through it if she wants. If you don't hear from her, well, then chances are she's telling you something. You can't guarantee she got the text, but likely she did. So if she ignores it, she's still telling you she's of the same mindset. And I'm a big believer in when somebody says, leave me alone, you leave them alone. You know, you don't keep pushing on them, because my experience is more often than not, it makes them madder.
Mm-hmm. It adds insult to injury or fire to the fuel.
Yeah. But I would say this. You said this earlier, and I wanted to address it. You said, we don't get along because we don't see things the same. You could still get along with somebody when you don't see things the same, whether it's religion or politics or child rearing, mm-hmm. whatever it is. You could still get along with them. You don't have to argue and dispute about the things you don't see eye to eye on.
Well, and there's a lot of people, Dr. Ray, that have the same thing with, but we don't talk about them subjects. We talk about children, grandchildren, and livelihoods.
Well, what makes your sister different?
Well, it is. She's always been that way. She's got a neurotic disorder. But my time is running out, Doc. Thank you.
Okay. All right, bud. I'll talk to you. Bye. I heard that beep, 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 and I thought it was a call. Okay. Just a particular timing on the phone. I should have got that for my daughters when they were teenagers. We had call waiting, you know, had to wait till they got off the phone. All right. Let me give the number out here, 877-573-7825. We had a caller there to address. That always puzzles me. I think with cell phones, what happens is somebody calls, and then Andrew or Eric is screening the call, and then during the screen, the call goes away. Huh. I would like to think that they're not having second thoughts about talking to me. I would like to think that the connection broke. Now, this didn't generally happen with landlines, that you called somebody from your landline and the call dropped. That didn't happen. But it happens more often when this stuff is flying through the air. But you ever ponder this? This borderlines, for me, on magic. Think about this. You call on a cell phone. Your words, those sounds, go into the air. They just go into the air. Ponder how this works. And then they're picked up by some receiver, and they're sent on, and they're picked up by your phone or their phone. The idea that stuff goes through the air, like right now, you're hearing me because these sounds are going through the air. I had a hard enough time understanding when they had to go through a line, a wire. I still didn't understand how it was transposed from electrical energy to sound energy. That's phenomenal to me. But now with smartphones, it's air. And that ought to tell you something about the Holy Eucharist. Dr. Ray, what are you talking about? That's a major stretch. No. Because really, you don't understand a minuscule fraction of how things work.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. Boom. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won him. You didn't win him. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Who may be baptized into the Catholic faith? The Catholic Catechism tells us that baptism may only be administered to a person who has never been previously baptized. When an adult is baptized, he undergoes a preparation for the sacrament called the catechumenate. The candidate for baptism is called a catechumen. The catechumen should be properly initiated into the mystery of salvation and the practice of the evangelical virtues. They should also be introduced into the life of faith, liturgy, and charity of the people of God by successive rites. Baptism of infants is, the Catechism says, an immemorial tradition of the Church. Church law urges that a child be baptized as soon after birth as possible, in order that the baby not be denied the priceless grace of becoming a child of God as soon as possible. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Boy, that sounds like something from Anton Carlos Jobim. Of course, it's not, because that is, what do you call that music, Andrew? Kind of like generic stuff you can download. It's Dr. Ray Grandy here. Thanks for joining me here in the Doctor's Inn. As always, a great pleasure to be with you. This is just a whole lot of fun. Just flat out is. And as I've said many times in this program, my Italian grandfather, who came from Italy when he was 17, could speak no English, never lost his Italian accent. If he were alive today, he'd say to me, "Rent. So what do you do?" Talk, Papo. "You talk?" "Yeah, I talk." "They pay you for that?" He couldn't understand it. Now, some of the people over at EWTN, Tom Price, Jack Williams, you know who you are. They would say, "You can talk and we'll pay you, but not the way you talk. We don't want to pay you," so just something there to consider. Helena, beautiful name.
Hi, Dr. Or Ray, how are you this morning?
Helena, is it pronounced Helena or Helena?
Helena.
Helena, that sounds classier, doesn't it? Helena.
Just like the saint.
Well, it's interesting because Helena is the capital of Montana, and you're calling from Portland, which is the capital of Maine, but neither one of those in this context are capitals. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Nobody ever calls me when they're well, Helena. Come on.
So my situation is I'm recently married, 2.5 years. It's both of our second marriage. I have two adult stepchildren who are married and are having children of their own now. So they both have one-year-olds. And I don't want to go into all the details, but I did something that I wasn't supposed to do. And it backfired on me. And so his children now have completely cut me off. So they view me as volatile, reactive, that I'm explosive. They want to protect their children from me.
Did you do something that bad?
So the son is in one of our rental properties, and yeah, I cut off the utility. So that's what started this. I didn't, one, let my husband know, so I didn't act as a teen. And then two, I didn't call the stepchild first. And so I completely
So they weren't paying
apologized.
Their bill. They weren't paying their bill.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't even that. It was that they were supposed to switch it over. They were new in one of these renter properties. I fall on the sword. I went to confession over it. I made amends. I sent an email. I verbally apologized. But I was told to, I was met with vulgar language and that there was nothing I could do to fix this, that they didn't feel safe having their families around me, that I'm a liar, a farce. And I won't repeat some of the other language that was used, but four-letter words. And so that happened October 6th. And so Thanksgiving, I wasn't allowed to participate. In the one-year-old birthday, Christmas, I wasn't allowed to participate. So each one of those months, my husband went away for 7-8 days. So he participated. He was welcome. And he went, got on a plane, went to New York, got on a plane, went to Dallas. But I was not allowed. So I'm being excluded and not allowed. They want a zero contact policy. And I'm not sure what to do. My husband has this vision that we're going to be this loving blended family, and we're newly married. We've only been married 2.5 years, and I've tried, and I was there when their children were born and up until this point, but my bad behavior has caused this huge rift, not only with his children but also his extended family.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Your bad behavior didn't. And you know why I say that? Because my guess is, I can't know this, my guess is they saw you before this as someone they could barely tolerate and someone who was an interloper with their dad and someone who was influencing their dad perhaps in ways they didn't like. And
that's correct. That's a good
point. I know it. You don't have to, you don't have to tell me I'm correct. I knew that.
Well, and that was the other thing that came up, is all of these infractions. So I actually was on a pilgrimage, and my husband sent me this email, and it was a list of all of the things that I had been doing wrong, not only with his kids, but with his sisters. So you're spot on. Thank you.
Now, that said, that the implications of that are that it isn't the fact that you cut off their utilities. That was the major excuse to say, look, we can finally get this woman out of our lives. We don't like her. And our list of grievances is growing. But here, I think, Helena, is what I don't understand, and you don't have to explain it to me, but I'm perplexed as to why your husband isn't saying, you can't do this to her, we're a package deal, you cut her out, you're cutting me out. Why wouldn't he do that?
I agree with you, and that's my issue. That's what hurts the most. I mean, I'm so hurt in so many ways. And as Christians, we're called to, show mercy and forgive one another. One of his sisters is a deacon in the church, in the Protestant church. So it's perplexing to me as well. But to answer your question, my husband, I guess, sides with them. He thinks that they're right. They have to feel safe. They have to feel...
He's afraid of losing them.
He is, and that he is. He also says, I'm afraid that they won't want to have a relationship with me. They haven't seen their own mother, in, I think, 4 years or something.
So this is nothing unusual for them. When somebody...
So they just cut her out.
Yeah, when somebody doesn't do what they want, or somebody offends them in egregious ways or in repetitive ways, they decide to get out of my life.
Right. We cancel you, right? And what's interesting about that is, especially with young people, they're 28 and 30, we're supposed to be inclusive and, the whole liberal mentality of, right? And so it's the complete antithesis of that, which is another thing that blows my mind. It's like, okay, you believe in including inclusivity, right? Except Helena. Everybody's included except Helena.
Well, you're right, but here's where your problem is, Helena. Here's where your problem is. You're not going to change them, and you're not going to change your husband. So what I would suggest you do is you find peace within yourself to say, well, that's who they are. That's the way they are. For the foreseeable future, I'm out of their lives. And my husband, for his reasons, because he's scared, he's not going to try to reconcile this. And if he says to you, well, you need to fix it, you ask him how. They don't want any part of me. How?
That's exactly where we're at. So he believes that he doesn't want to be in the middle. It's not his problem. And I said that exact same thing. I'm like, well, if there's no contact, I can't, you know, I don't want to seem overbearing and, you know, aggressive.
I'm going to have to let you go because I'm up against a heartbreak, Helena. You can listen after the heartbreak because I'll make a few more comments about this. Okay, dear?
I would appreciate it. God bless you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. Dr. Ray.
Call from God. Father Mitch Pacwa shares his experience.
I certainly had a bit of opposition. My father wasn't pleased with this at all, and he kept arguing with me. Once when I was 12, he said to me, what do you want to be a priest for? Why don't you be a doctor? You don't have to be a priest to help people. You can be a doctor and get married, have kids. And I said to him then, Dad, if I was a doctor and I help people get better, that would be very good. But later on, they're going to die anyway. So if I'm a priest and I hear somebody's confession and they go to heaven, that lasts forever. So that's better. And he didn't know what to say. And he continued to oppose the idea over the next years. Yet that didn't stop me. And even when he said, I'm going to disinherit you if you become a priest. And on the day of my first Mass, he did. But as I also said to him then, he told me, okay, you're out of my will. I said, Dad, I can't keep it anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm a Jesuit, and we can't keep the money, so it really doesn't affect me. The issue is I'm trying to follow what God, our Lord, is asking of me. And this has been where I have found the greatest joy, that doing what I believe through my own prayer and through reflection and thinking about it and moving from a little boy's idea of what a priest would be like all the way to now in my early 50s, you know, realizing that this is exactly what I think is going to please God the most. And that's what I want to do, to please God.
For information on the priesthood or religious life, log on to www.ewtn.com/religious-life.
Talking to Helena. Her situation, kind of sad. And unfortunately, you know, it's hard not to become cynical. I really have to fight becoming cynical. Because she called in and she described a situation where she committed an unforgivable sin. For whatever the reason, she temporarily turned off in her rental unit the utilities to her, one of her stepchildren and the family, I suppose. And they just erupted over that. That was just an unforgivable, horrible sin. She realized she did wrong and she apologized and she did all kinds of mea culpas and forget it. And what typically happens in that relationship breaking event is then you find out all the ways this was building up, all the things I don't like about you, I never liked about you, all the things that you did. And this could be very much complicated by they didn't want her to be with their father. Even though, interestingly enough, a part of my theory could go out the window because they've also shunned their biological mother. So maybe that's just their style. For whatever the reason, this litany of offenses that Helena has committed and the children, I think there's, what, two of them? She said 28 and 30 was their ages, something like that. Has said, get out of our lives. Get out. But they don't want Dad out, of course. And so they invite Dad to everything, and he goes. He goes. He'll go spend a week with them and all of that. And his view is, well, Helena, you better fix this because I'm not going to get in the middle. The problem with that is he is in the middle. For heaven's sakes, you can say, I don't want to get in the middle, but you're in the middle by definition. Because the woman you're married to is being shunned by your kids. And you have leverage. You could say you cannot do this. More recently, a good friend of mine had the same situation happen. Both of them were widowed and widower. They got married, and the kids didn't like it. And they said, you can't come to Thanksgiving, new wife. And the dad said, well, if she doesn't come, I don't come. Dad could do this. And that would be the one way that Helena would have some chance to reconcile. But right now, she has no chance. She has no chance at all because Dad is basically saying, I'm going to live with the status quo. When they invite me to things, I'm going to go. You're not invited. So Helena, poor Helena, is going to have to fight her sense of bitterness, her sense of resentment, her sense of betrayal about this. Because I'm assuming she's not getting a divorce. So if she's staying in the marriage, she's going to have to recognize the new reality. And the new reality is, for whatever his reasons, her new husband of 2.5 years has basically said, I'm throwing my lot in with my kids. I've known them for 30 years. I've known you for 2.5. Unfortunately, what he doesn't realize is that he has the leverage to solve this thing. And he's trying to tell Helena, you solve it. She has no leverage. What can she do? They want no contact with her. And ironically, they wear the mantle of Christian in another denomination and a female deacon. But it's kind of amazing what we can do because Scripture is so clear. We will be judged by how we love, not how much we know, even not how many prayers we make, how much we love. And if you're going to say, I don't like you, well, the problem is that's your dad's wife. So you got to put up with her. You got to tolerate her. Now, I don't know. Maybe 50 people would hear what Helena did all those times and say, yeah, Helena, you were out of line. You're a problem. Okay. Then you're forced to do damage control. You're going to say, man, I'm so sorry. I won't do that stuff again. But at this point, you can't even do that because they don't want to hear it. So I guess, Helena, if you're still listening, you're going to have to find a way to have your own personal peace about this because you cannot just continue every time your husband goes there without you. You can't just continue to stew for the next 6 days. You can't do that. And you have to be careful because that could really, really, if it hasn't already, put a major rift in your marriage. Maybe you could view it as he's too insecure. Again, I'm speculating, but he's too insecure in his children's relationship with him because he knows they've already written off their mother. So what would keep them from writing him off? And perhaps, I think he thinks, that if he says, if my wife can't come, I don't come, they would say, then you don't come. I guess he knows his kids. When we come back, we'll get to your calls. I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
Some great people have shown respect for God. Can I read you a little quotation from Albert Einstein, who many times showed a great respect for religion and was one of the great admirers of Pope Pius XII for his stand against the Holocaust during the Second World War. Einstein wrote, "The fairest thing we can experience is the mysterious. is the fundamental emotion that stands at the cradle of all true art and science. A knowledge of the existence of something we can't penetrate, of the manifestations of the profoundest reason and the most radiant beauty, which are only accessible to our minds in their most elementary form. It is this knowledge and this emotion that constitute the truly religious attitude. Oh my, so beautifully said.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Hip, hip, hooray. Thanks for joining me here. Let's go to Simon from Kansas. Hello, Simon.
Hey, Dr. Ray.
Thank you, call. Thanks for the call, sir.
Yeah, how you doing?
Well, nothing gaining on me.
Yeah, thank you for coming to Overland Park. You came there one time, and I really appreciate you coming to the Church of Ascension.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I had a question, Dr. Ray. So I have 13 siblings. They all live outside the U.S. in Africa. I tend to be the person who try to unite them. But anytime we do that, we come up with something that we need to do, it starts okay. But when we start disagreeing, and keep in mind, all our nephews, nieces are also in this chat group that we have, like we call WhatsApp. But most of the time, it ends up with my siblings now starting calling each other names, abuses, and it takes over, and all the nephews and nieces. I find it a very toxic environment. And for me to get out of it, I try to block all them so that they have no way of abusing me or calling me names and all these kind of things. But I'm curious if that is the best way to have the relationship with my siblings, or it's just to keep up, because I've tried this for so many years, doesn't seem to work. And I don't want to be in a place where people are always calling each other names. We are not growing as families. It's just
you say you got 10 siblings?
13 siblings.
Wow. All grown, I assume.
All grown. The youngest is like 42 years old.
Instead of dropping out of this sibling chat thread, what if you stayed in it, but you don't say anything? Because what it sounds like is when you do say something and somebody of that 10 is going to disagree with you, then they may variously attack you or argue with you. What if you didn't say much? You just kind of used it to keep abreast of what's going on with your siblings. And then, when something ugly happens and you think it's a sibling that you could talk with, text them alone, individually. Don't text them on the thread. So it's a two-pronged...
I've done that, Dr. Ray. I've tried that approach of going to them directly, sometimes meeting them face-to-face. But it's like a cheering squad. One will start something, and all of them will do it. Even if I don't say anything, they'll still write to me directly and be calling me things, which I don't respond. I just look at them and I pray for them. But I find like we are not building the relationship we should. And I'm curious whether that is the right way to deal with them or just block them. That way I don't... If I go there physically, we can meet. And when I go there, they don't even say anything. But when they have this place, the thread where they can put all their things, that's where they put everything. So I find I want to stay there, but I don't want to stay there because it's like you feel like you're not growing in any relationship with either of them.
Well, it's perplexing, Simon, that you have 10 different personalities and they are all difficult to get along with. Is that what you're saying? Because it would seem to me that some of them would be more reasonable or more tolerant or more mature, and you wouldn't have the same level of trouble with all of them.
That's true. I have like two or three or four of them that they are fancy sitters. They will not say anything. They're just waiting to jump in. But I have three or four that I get along pretty good, and I have access to those. But it's the incitement that comes after that, and it appears the majority will sway in and reason the same.
Well,
even
I would be
I have two or three.
I'd be real careful if you're going to have a relationship with three or four of them that's relatively smooth. I would be real careful about communicating to them on this thread of 10 people. I wouldn't do that because that allows the most difficult ones to jump in and stir the waters. I would keep my connections with the ones that I get along with individual. That's what I would do. And then the second thing is I wouldn't jump out of this thread. I would probably just monitor it to see what's happening. Let's say, for example, that one of the siblings that you get along with and is reasonable gets attacked by the other six. Well, then you would be able to contact them individually to support them, to say, I heard what you had to say, and I think you are totally right about that, and it's a moral perspective that's a good one. So you could give them support individually. If you totally wipe everybody out, then you don't know what's going on, and you don't know who's getting attacked and put down that you could help.
Okay.
That's what I would do. But I would be real slow to say anything on the thread and on that thread for all 10 of those folks.
Makes sense. I appreciate that. Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Okay, Simon. Take care. Isn't it interesting? I have in one of my books, I talk about this. I call it the law of social proximity. Basically, that means, let me draw an extreme example. If you watch any of these crime shows, they say that most often, unless it's a gang-related murder or a drive-by, that most often it is a family member or someone in their close social circle who kills them. Now, on a far less extreme tangent, most often it is the people closest to us in our families, our relatives, our coworkers, longstanding friends, who can be very quick to be difficult or to be critical or mean-spirited or manipulative. It's because the close contact and the emotions involved. And it makes people just quicker to hurt others. That's sad. It's a sad reality. And I've often made the observation that I'm 99.9999999% loving because I have no ill will towards anybody in Europe, Indonesia, Africa, Mongolia, Tajikistan. But, you know, those 10 or 12 people that are my closest social contacts, now those are the ones that you got to work harder at being loving and tolerant toward. Irony, ain't it? Like the old phrase, I love mankind. It's people I have a hard time with. And I think that Simon's call reflects that. He's got 10 siblings in another continent, and they're still finding ways to go at each other. Imagine all the other 10 are still in Africa. I don't assume that some of them were here. I don't know why Simon was the only one here. Yeah, it sure tests the limits, doesn't it? I mean, I can always pray decade of a rosary better than I can forgive something that an in-law or a relative does to me. Just let me pray the rosary, okay? I can do that better. All right, got to go. I want to thank Andrew Krucek, my producer man. And I want to thank Eric Dumont, Call Screamer. And I want to thank EWTN and Ave. They are co-producers of this program. And we've been together for some 20-plus years. Yeah, I was so excited. I couldn't believe that they'd come and approach me with a talk show right out of high school. Wow. Boy, that's great. Walk with God. It'll help you be nicer to people, or at least not to be so upset by them.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.